All right, Sean, why don't you tell us a little bit about your book? It's called Doc and Raider, Incredibly Lifelike.
Well,
so
it's
how did, how did the how did you come up with the title for that?
Well, just to bring possible novices up to speed, it's the second anthology of Doc and Raider cartoons. The title was meant as a bit of an esoteric pun. We all grew up with Life magazine and how it's a reflection of life in the U.S. And through this title, what I wanted to do was to say this is the kind of thing that would probably show up in life. Therefore, it is incredibly life-like.
Okay. Are you being sued by Life magazine over
this? Oh, hell, they'll probably never even know about it.
Okay. How did the cartoon start with the two characters? When did you first start doing Doc and Raider?
Almost a decade ago. I think it's now entering its 10th year. And it began in a little newspaper out in Vancouver called Q. I was commissioned by the editor to come up with a single panel cartoon of some kind, and to my surprise, in the next issue, they ran three of the panels. Unfortunately, it was also the paper's last edition. A few months later, it got picked up by a somewhat terribly politically correct newspaper called Angles. From there, it expanded to Extra in Toronto, and at its height was hovering around 55 publications around the world.
So so how many countries are you in with this thing? You have to think on this one.
I don't know accurately. About 20.
About 20 countries. Wow. Are these primarily Europe?
Mostly Europe.
Mostly Europe and North America.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the characters. Just who are Doc and Raider?
Raider is a construction worker.
he's the one with the beard.
He's the one with the beard.
Okay.
Hello, American readers. He's the one with the beard. He is a construction worker. He has hit his 40th birthday, but the years have been very kind.
Well, he's a cartoon, so
he's a cartoon, and therefore he can look like anything I want him to. He's the more stable of the two, stable in the sense of providing the foundation for the relationship. Doc, on the other hand, who is just a hair younger and is a struggling writer, is much more bright colors and lots of paintbrushes and, you know, just the wild brush strokes that come in any relationship. So the two of them sort of balance each other out kind of nicely like that.
Okay. So where Doc
is, by the way, the blonde with the curly hair.
Right. Okay. So where do these characters live? Or where have they lived over the past few years?
Oh, they've lived lots of places, just about any place I have lived. but they've sort of settled in the country now. There was a series of cartoons that was done approximately a year ago where Raider was gay-bashed. And as a result of that, they have moved out to the country where they operate a very, very small ranch. Nothing earth-shaking, but it's enough to keep them happy.
Okay. Well, it's kind of interesting, the kinds of things that the characters become involved with, kinds of interests and hobbies that they have. How would you describe some of the things, some of the activities that they they're involved in?
Eclectic.
I recall seeing them at the opera.
These are a couple of guys who thoroughly enjoy life and all that life has to offer. All the more so, especially since Doc found out that he was HIV positive.
Now, was that fairly early on in the cartoon when you were doing
it?
About midway.
Yeah, the cartoon is drawn pretty much to reflect real time. So the guys are roughly 8 years older than when they were first drawn.
Okay. Was it a difficult decision on your part to pursue that part of the storyline with making one of the characters HIV positive?
Oh, no question that it was a toughie.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, I thought it was important enough that it had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, it is a part of our reality. I don't know, I don't know any gay man who doesn't know somebody who is HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
And to have these two just sort of blithely off and running and doing whatever it is that they choose to do, without somehow reflecting that reality seemed ungracious,
mm-hmm.
I guess is the best way to put it.
Right. What kind of reactions have you gotten from readers to the two characters?
Well, it's been sort of a mixed bag of tell. It depends upon whether or not the readers liked what they saw.
well, that kind of goes without saying, Sean.
For the most part, the reader response has been really good to the series.
Mm-hmm.
They really do seem to lock onto these guys and identify nicely with them. But I think that just comes from the fact that you're looking at a couple of fairly generic gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do have their little quirks and their little unique things. But for the most part, they're the guys that live down the hall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the fellows that live across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much different from any of the neighbors that you would have in a typical large urban gay neighborhood.
Okay.
Despite the fact that they live in the country now.
Now, are Doc and Ritter the only two characters that appear in this strip?
For the most part.
Mm-hmm.
There are others that make little cameo appearances every now and then. I refer to a character by the name of Elliot, their best friend. But he's referred to, for the most part, and hardly ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm trying to think if I've ever drawn Elliot.
Sort of like the teacher in the Peanuts comic strip.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Okay.
Elliot has never appeared in any of the panels.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have, but not Elliot.
Right. Now, what about the kinds of reactions that you've gotten now? Or do you find that it's kind of evenly split between men and women that find the characters appealing?
You know, Extra in Toronto ran a poll a couple of years ago, and they asked their readers to assess the various things that are in the paper. Hands down, the number one thing that people turned to first was Doc and Raider. It was something like 83% of the men, and surprisingly, 86% of the women.
So slightly more women found the cartoon interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's the domesticity of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that it is a settled relationship. There are things in it that women can look at and say, good Lord, yes, we have to deal with that too.
Mm-hmm.
Cats jumping up on the bed and, you know, throwing up on things and cars breaking down and losing your keys in the rain. I mean, who can't really relate to something like this?
Can you tell me about some of your favorite cartoons from the strip or ones that have gotten really good reaction from some of your readers?
Oh, yeah, two in particular. The first year that the cartoon panel ran, they were strictly roommates. And then came the panel that established them as a couple, which shows the two of them in bed, Doc asleep, Raider, his eyes wide open, staring straight at the reader, and the caption, and I'm probably going to get this slightly wrong, but something to the effect of 2 hours, 14 minutes, and 12 seconds after the change from roommates to lovers, Raider suddenly remembers the meaning of the word commitment. That was the signature cartoon for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And then a few years later, there was another one that, again, showed them in bed. But very clean, you know, very clean. And, you know, one of the cats, the elder cat, is on the bed asleep. And the younger one has just come in and is bouncing all over the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And Doc is saying to Raider, baby's awake, your turn. That has now pretty much become the new signature cartoon for the series.
Okay, so in a way, it kind of looks at kind of family values with a gay couple.
Oh yeah, this is very family value oriented.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your inspirations for doing particular cartoons? Do you draw on your own experience or things that you observe?
I just sit and watch. People say the damnedest things when they don't think anyone's listening.
Mm-hmm.
Classic case in point. This became a cartoon almost completely unedited. I'd gone shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company, which is a major department store in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the furniture department. And here's this happy little gay couple that I was with. They were out shopping for a bed. One of them lies down on the bed, stretches his arms out, and says, I don't know, it feels a little small. And I looked at this and thought, there's a cartoon. And it was. And it was good.
Now, I understand you are not a native Canadian. Is that correct?
That's unfortunately very correct. I wish that God had been kinder to me, but unfortunately I'm stuck with simply being an immigrant.
Okay.
No songs from Supertramp, please.
or Anne Murray or Gordon Lightfoot, et cetera, et cetera. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the panhandle of Texas,
mm-hmm.
in a little town called Harrisford. For some odd reason that is known only to the history of the town, Hereford. There are some city records that take the S out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I grew up on my grandfather's ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Left there when I was approximately 12 years old, and moved to the bustling city of Fort Worth, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And went to school at the University of Texas at Arlington, where I got a completely useless degree in French.
Uh-huh.
And then life went on.
Were you doodling and drawing and pursuing
I was told vehemently from the time that I was like 6 years old that artists can't make money.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent, that's true.
Well, it sounds like you tried.
Yeah.
It sounds like you tried. Did you have an awareness that you were a little bit different from everyone else when you were growing up in Texas?
Oh, please. I sat there, you know, practically adoring the Metropolitan Opera every Sunday afternoon, and my mother would look at me and go, what is all that stuff anyway? I would invite my friend Morris Zedley. Ah, dear Morris, I'll never forget him. Probably hopelessly straight by now, but at any rate. Morris and I would get together on Saturday nights when my mother was off doing something, I forget what. And I would go over to Morris's house, and we would watch like Steve Reeves movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought those were just so impossibly cool.
Okay. Now you lived in San Francisco for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You've lived a couple of other places here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. You name the town, I've been there.
Okay. Now in Canada, you lived in Toronto for a while.
Yeah, Toronto for approximately 5 years before moving out to Calgary.
And then now you're in Calgary.
Yes.
What are some observations that you've made about Canadian versus American society and the kind of character of the people? How do people react to you as an American when you first moved to Canada?
Well, they really weren't conscious of the fact that I was an American. That I was an American.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't talk like one.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me for saying this. I don't act like one.
Well, you really don't sound like you really don't sound like you're from Texas. So.
Well, Canadians are very nice.
Uh-huh.
In fact, in a McLean's poll, that was conducted a few years ago. They asked the top three things that Canadians thought of when they thought of Americans, and they all said that they were rude and garrulous and insensitive and impolite, and you know, you get the idea.
Okay.
And Americans relentlessly, the top three choices were they were nice.
They were nice.
We're nice up here. We're just so nice.
Well, has living in Canada changed your outlook on the world or changed you in any way?
Oh, definitely. In the States, there's a very, what I would call, ethnocentric view of the world. If it ain't American, it ain't good enough. You know? Goddamn Frenchy people, why can't they accept the fact that Euro Disney is the best thing to happen to them since Marie Antoinette?
Okay.
You come up to Canada and you're conscious of the fact that you're a part of a much larger world community.
Mm-hmm. You see a lot of European influences in Canada.
Ooh, yeah. A lot of European influences, a lot of Asiatic influences.
Mm-hmm. But in what respects as far as, let's say, European culture?
Well, I mean, hell, look at the city of Montreal. Better example, look at the city of Quebec.
Okay.
You know, Quebec City itself, which is the capital of the province of Quebec, is virtually interchangeable from any medium-sized French town that you could find throughout France.
Mm-hmm.
Montreal, it manages to combine a lot of various European styles of life, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does that translate into attitudes towards gays and lesbians or other people who might be a little bit different?
Sort of curious, actually. For the most part, now are we talking Canadians or Montrealers? Specify.
Oh, I have to specify.
Well, yeah.
We can't speak in generic terms about Canadians.
Unfortunately, no. In Montreal, gays are very well integrated into most of society. If you go there, you'll notice that there are not much in the, there's not much in the way of like gay groups or lesbian groups, with either support or cultural or anything like that. Just because the community, for all practical purposes, doesn't really exist as an entity. You come out to Toronto, my God, they're everywhere. Groups for this, groups for that, groups for this over here.
So you think that the more open attitude kind of negates the need for some of these groups?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Hmm, that's interesting. So. Kind of to take this a step further, it's been noted by some people that bar attendance is down in several cities and several organizations are finding it more and more difficult to get volunteers. Do you think that may translate, at least in this country, to be related to the more open attitudes in some cities?
You mean they have open attitudes in the U.S. now? Boy, I have been away for a while.
Well, I guess we're going to leave that one alone.
I think we should leave that one alone. I've been reading some of the stuff that's been going on. It's scary down there.
Well, of course, you heard what happened today.
I saw this thing on headline news.
Yes, about the Defense of Marriage Act being passed by the our wonderful
Senate.
Forgive
me for saying so, but typical American political stupidity. You know, you have no other groups left to badger, so let's go after the gays. That's it.
Do you find the kind of conservatives that we have here that are so rabid against homosexuals? And how are they viewed in Canada?
There aren't as many of them, and they're not as vocal. There are a couple.
Are they nicer?
Yeah, they're nicer. That's it. Now, there are a couple of groups up here, one called Real Women. Now, you know, this group's
idea. Real women?
Yes. This group's idea of a real woman is someone who stays in the kitchen, is faithful to her husband, has his children, and never asks a darn thing.
That sounds like Microsoft Bob.
I'm not going to walk near that station. I'm going to put it down and walk slowly away. Moving along.
Are there places in Canada that have anti-discrimination ordinances? Is that fairly common, or is that rare, or is it becoming more common?
It's becoming more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Most major cities now have them. There are a few exceptions, but not many. I believe at this point 7 of the provinces have anti-discrimination laws on the books.
Mm-hmm.
Alberta is not one of them. They claim that we're already covered under existing laws, and yet when a gay teacher sued the school system for discrimination when he was fired for specifically for just being gay, the province just sort of said, well, hey, you know, he should have told them.
Hmm. What about Calgary? Can you tell me a little bit about what Calgary's like? Now, where exactly is Calgary for?
It's sort of north of Montana.
Okay. So we're talking, Montana. Okay, so it's sort of out plains, western area.
Right at the foot of the Rockies. The Rocky Mountains are maybe an hour away from here.
Mm-hmm. Now, does it have the kind of frontier spirit to it?
It probably used to. It doesn't so much anymore. Now it's become a big town.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Lots of skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Canadian corporations have their headquarters out here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cost of living is relatively cheap.
How about the gay and lesbian community in Calgary?
Well, it's an interesting one.
In what ways?
Well, it seems to be in two separate groups. You've got one group that is like the organizations, like the Alberta Rocky Gay Rodeo Association, or Club 181, which is sort of a women's outdoor group, or Team Calgary, which is getting ready for the next gay games, or stuff like that.
Right.
Then you have the bars.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody I know goes to the bars. Well, they do go to the bars, but they're just not really willing to admit it. Because the bars in this town, forgive me for saying this, are really dreadful.
Maybe we better not go near that one.
I don't think we should, because they really are quite, quite dreadful. There are only a couple of exceptions, and I wouldn't even consider them bars. They're more like restaurants that serve liquor.
Okay. What about, you mentioned the gay radio. Let's go on to something a little bit more interesting.
You don't think gay radio is interesting?
I said let's go on to something more interesting. Gay radio.
You know, come on. We're talking about 800 guys running around in really tight blue jeans. That sounds interesting to me.
Now, have you actually participated in some of these gay radio events?
Let's not walk near that one either, because that's pretty embarrassing. So we'll let that one sit, shall we? Moving along.
Okay. Well, suffice to say that maybe you've given it a good try. Is that maybe good?
Moving along.
Okay. Well, a couple of interesting things, getting back to Doc and Raider for a moment. They kind of impress me as not being too stereotypical of gay men.
I should hope not.
Is it just me, or do they seem like a couple of straight guys? Let's see how you react to that one.
That's it. They're straight acting, straight looking. Oh, and a new one that I found tonight. Straight sounding.
Straight sounding.
Yeah, the new buzzword for the 90s. I'm a straight sounding kind of guy. That means I've got a really low voice, and you don't, you prissy little queen.
The characters.
They're just a couple of guys.
Okay.
I mean, that's really all there is to it. Whether they were straight or gay, they would still just be a couple of guys.
Uh huh. Now, one of the things that you've explored kind of in a very subtle way in the cartoon, and at least judging from the two books I've seen, is the two characters like a kind of rough sexual play. Is
mm-hmm.
that fair to say?
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
They're
certainly very physical with each other.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting how usually they're somehow either touching each other or something like that in two cartoons, or in the cartoon books. Tell me a little bit, getting a little bit more serious now. You tackled in this particular book two series of panels that deal with some pretty serious issues. There was one on bashing. Could you tell me a little bit about that cartoon series and how you came up with the idea for it?
That was drawn shortly after my friend Paul Weeks Bassett died. Paul was a really hell of a nice guy. He and his lover John both were instrumental in making me feel very, very comfortable in Toronto. And shortly after his death, John and I were having dinner one night, and it was one of the few times when John allowed himself the luxury of opening up and saying, "I just don't understand why it happened. You know, why would God allow this to happen?"
Mm-hmm.
Now, I knew I couldn't tackle something as serious as somebody dying of AIDS in this panel, so I knew I'd have to soft pedal it a little bit. And at the same time, Toronto had been going through a whole series of gay bashings. They eventually found the kids that did it.
Right.
But it was getting kind of relentless, and nobody could understand exactly why this was happening. And so I started drawing this thing. When I originally sketched it out, Rader was not the victim. It was somebody else altogether.
Hmm.
And
so you were, initially you were reluctant to have one of the main characters be the victim of the bashing.
Well, just that what was going to go into the series was going to be slightly different in content.
Mm-hmm.
And after sketching it out in pencil, I looked at it and I thought, nah, this ain't it. It's got to hit home a lot harder. It's got to be a lot more immediate.
Hmm.
And that's when I realized that it was indeed Rader in the alley.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's being bashed by a group of homophobic teenagers, basically.
That's the assumption, yeah.